Okay, why don't we shoot?
I think he's offset. I've got the slate.
Welcome to the most professional podcast on earth, where one host is
Hello
chewing gum.
From my backside.
You right there? I was in the middle of saying something, but...
I was in the middle of singing. You interrupted me, cunt.
Is that right, mate? You think this will be annoying to people?
Oh, it's already annoying to me and I want to murder you.
Yeah, I'm just proud of the boys and big win for the Australians today, obviously. And this is, should we just watch it real quick, the only podcast where one of the hosts will do a impression of Mark Tubby Taylor 2 minutes into the podcast. I am one of your hosts, I literally forgot my name for a second. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to dementia school to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the burp and burbler. It's Scully, big whoop. Want to fight about it? Fast sticker. Here she is.
I tried to do another burp and I didn't do it. I
got the Kelly for Stuka Blues.
Oh, God.
Ooh. I woke up this morning, tried to do a burp. What's going on, baby?
I got the diarrhea in my butthole. My bidet ain't working today.
Oh, no.
I got the hot burn. Burning up my brain. Mate, paid for itself. Paid for itself. Ivan Reitman is a genius.
How much did that mouth guitar cost? Just paid for itself. Working dog reference number one for
Mate,
the podcast.
Yeah. We've got to do a working, we've got to do like a late show reference every episode. I think we pretty much do.
It's at least a working dog reference. Sometimes we, sometimes we diversify and talk about like the office, Frontline or the Castle.
Yeah, I feel like not a day goes by, not a day goes by. Gonna do a little poo and a wee. I feel like not
How was that not an 80s like parody song? The day go by.
Cuz day goes a bad word.
Is it?
Day go is not a dirty word.
Day go. Oh God.
Day go's a bad word.
We're in some dangerous territory now.
I'm pretty sure we're going to get cancelled because we said, but I think it's
well,
like...
Well, you're not because you're Italian and
well, I think it's a
bad
I'm not
because I'm married in Italian.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, oh God, my ADD. Oh, Jesus, what was I saying? Day goes by where I don't say a line from Barjas. I'm pretty sure me and you, which is a sketch from The Late Show, I'm pretty sure me and
Stukes,
you...
farting is not a line from
no,
Barjas.
Because the whole thing with Barjas is that he's like a fat guy who kind of farts and stuff. But it's...
He's a fat police detective.
He's a fat police
detective. Inspector Barjas.
Just look up Barjas on YouTube and watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and they, watch the 38 minutes. You'll... Yeah. It's look, it's not high art, but it's fucking hilarious.
It is. The one... It's... I love it so hard.
Yeah.
And not a day goes by where I don't.
Not a day goes by.
Come here, puppy girl. Come here. Where I don't quote Barjas, particularly the saying, out of the way, extras.
I always thought that was from Kath and Kim. But,
No. It's where it's in the very first episode of Barjas where he's like gets a call that he has to go and get the, you know, cops and robbers shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs out of the room and then as he like the camera shows him running past, there's extras like as police man and woman and pushes them out of the way. Out of the way, extras. And I say it every day to the dogs. Dog or dogs.
I was telling some of the work crew that I went to the cricket with yesterday about how you always talk about my mum as if she's Cath Day Knight.
Matt, she is your mother.
And they found that very hilarious.
Your mother, when we moved into this place that we're living in now, your mum was here and we were like moving furniture and she went, don't leave it. No, Jack, give it a second. Let me put the Dyson over it. And I was like, okay. She's skinny. She's got short hair like Kath. Uh-huh. And she's just, oh, no, that's nice. No, listen. Listen, like, what your mum's great. I love your mum. She's great.
What I think of the line that resonates with me about my family the most is the line in the castle where they talk about moving the cars out of the driveway.
Not if I'm going to get to that Cortina.
Yeah. I'm going to move the Cortina so I can get to the... I was just thinking,
watch the boat, mate.
Hey, can you move the Camry? Do you move the Camry so I can move the Sportivo so I can get the boat out of the garret? Like, it's
mate,
always...
so that good.
Mum and Jack are always having those conversations.
They really are.
And they never talk about the car. Like, yeah. People our age are like, use my car or I'm going to drive the car or your car.
Yeah.
I don't say I'm driving the Kia. But they use the brand name. Yeah. Yes. They use the brand. No, no, no. It's not even just the Kia. It's like, what's your car? The Sorento or Cerato? Cerato?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Cerato.
It would be like if every time you went to the shops, like, I'm just going to jump in the Cerato to go to the shops.
Well, probably because your mom's got a nice car, so it's fun for her to go, I'm just going to jump in the Prius.
Yeah.
Just,
but
just
my uncle does the same
course.
Thing as well. Yeah, I took the Lexus down to Torquay to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so weird. But they definitely do that. And she's definitely, I was saying to the guys yesterday, she's definitely got the energy of, right, what have I got to do? Nothing. Excellent. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's
like your mum
just constant manic energy of like, what's next? Ah,
your mum's manic energy of like, so much to do, so much to do. Mm-hmm. What are you doing today? Oh, got to get a haircut. Got to feed the dog.
Yeah, I went and visited mum last week. I've had a week off work because I'm going into a new role. And I went down to visit my mum and it was one of these weird things where I just felt like I was kind of in the way. Like they've got their own life down there, which is great because it means that, you know, a lot of people have the problem of like not being able to get their parents out of their lives, right? But I go down and visit them and they're just like,
they're
happy to see me for about 12 hours and then they kind of just want to be like, okay.
Yeah, they've got lives.
We've got stuff to get back to, you know.
They've got lives.
Mum was telling me that she's on the progress, she's gone onto the progress committee in St. Leonard's.
Oh, really? Yeah. Like council?
Which is a very hilarious Australian thing where you go on something called a progress committee in a country town basically to shoot down any progress that happens.
Mate, did you see, I mean, for our listeners at home, just go and Google this. I saw this on TikTok where, do you smell a poo? Do you smell a dog poo?
Yeah, I did one in my pants.
Okay. I don't know. She's got a diaper on, so little Evie's got a diaper on.
Well,
so
it's going to have to wait for another 23 minutes.
Anyway, so Google it. Have a Google on the TikTok, and it was basically
TikTok.
It was basically
boomer.
A clip. Listen,
yeah,
it was a clip from some shit like Channel 7 News or something,
mm-hmm.
And it was all of these Brighton residents who are protesting.
Affordable housing.
Yeah, it's not even
not like a
government housing.
No, but like if it was an apartment if it was like a 12-story apartment building or something, I could understand. Like, no, we don't go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was literally a bunch of white privileged boomers.
All over 60?
Yeah. And the thing is, Bob, it wasn't like, it's not even public housing. It's affordable housing.
It's not public. It's
so
affordable
it's
housing.
Like they're building apartments that for people to buy.
Mm.
Mm. Not like public housing, like, oh, we're going to put people who are, you know, coming out
just
of
regular two-bedroom apartments that
recovery or whatever.
Could cost you $700,000.
Yeah,
and
it's still
going to
cost a fucking fortune for people to. It's
but
like, no, we don't want any middle-class people in here. Thank you
shame,
very much.
Shame, shame. And I'm like, and just look, when you look at them all and they all look the same, it's like.
Yeah,
fuck
same
you,
little, same
I'm
little.
Glad.
All the women with the same little tight little perm with a blue rinse through it,
and just looking at them, going, "Oh, protect Brighton from anyone that doesn't have a fucking 17 house portfolio." I'm like, I'm fucking glad people are fucking robbing houses in Brighton.
Listen,
I'm fucking glad.
We're quite happy to have middle class people to come in here and make our coffees, but we don't want them living here.
Mate, I mean, no wonder criminals. Like, if I were a criminal, I would be like, "Let's go to the richest neighborhood." Right?
Mm-hmm.
And just try and steal those things in those cars, because those people are all like,
watch out, you'll start a revolution with that kind of talk, Shay.
All the people that live there, they might like leave a door open because they're like, well, I live in Brighton, nothing ever happens here. Robbers aren't going to come to fucking Glenroy. I mean, they have. But like really, in the poor areas, we're more likely to, like, we have a baseball bat at our door. We're more likely to go.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Like, we had a situation where a guy was like ringing our doorbell late on Sunday night, and through the door,
it was
a Wednesday night.
It was the middle of the fucking week. No, it wasn't even a weekend.
It was like 9 o'clock, and this like weird guy was like,
I know you're fucking talking to me.
Yeah. And I just yelled through the door, get the fuck off our property now. Through the door, like, no bullshit. I don't put up with any of that shit. And he left, you know, and we looked at him on the camera.
Some Kelly
stuff.
From New York City.
Mate, New York City. Anyway, so I'm just saying, like, I feel like in maybe the areas that we live in, if someone wants to start something, yeah, shitholes. I feel like if someone's going to start something, they have to be prepared that we're just as much of a psychopath
as
they are.
You
want to
be starting something.
That was really funny.
You
got to
remember we're psychos. Huh?
It was really, yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
That was really funny what I just said, and you had to cut it off with your dumb fucking whatever.
It's called a song parody.
Yeah, anyway. But anyway, the point is we're just as much of a psychopath as anyone who would rob the house is. So it's like, mate, if you look like we're moving to Werribee, yeah, right?
You better be real
careful. If you're someone in Werribee who's going to break into a house, I grew up in Werribee, lived in New York. This guy's from Broadie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kill you.
And I've got...
We will fucking murder you.
I've got a gamut of mental illnesses.
Yeah,
I can't
same.
Even tell you how many.
Mate, if I see rage, I black out.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't hold up in a court of law, but this is the thing.
But by that time, you're dead and I'm in a court of law.
But do you know what I mean? But if you get in like, and also, I'm also saying this because I know that Beck Judd lives in Brighton, and I think that out of all the celebrities...
Oh, your nemesis, Beck Judd.
Mate, out of all the celebrities, I feel like I hate Beck Judd more than, like, it goes Hitler, Trump, Judd.
Yeah.
Like that. I hate Rebecca Judd, and I hope that I know someone that knows someone who knows someone and passes it on, and like we start some kind of war.
Yeah.
Because I
fucking... Flame war with the Judds.
Because I fucking hate her. Like anytime I see that she advertises a product, I boycott that. So there's particular skincare that I've seen her do stuff for and that I've still boycott. Even though I don't use her anymore, I still boycott her.
Jizz for women, right?
Right. Anyway, so... When I look at, and I think that's why I hate Brighton so much, because she lives in like a $12 million mansion and is constantly complaining, like during lockdowns and stuff, she was very dictated down.
She did not shut the fuck up.
Not only was
she
dictated
down. House the size of a suburb.
Right? Like, she was all dictated down, right? And she's one of those people that's like, this government isn't protecting us from crime. I'm like, you're just mad you live in Brighton and there's fucking crime in Brighton. You don't care about crime. You care about crime to your fucking
house.
Yeah,
there's a chance that it might
affect
you.
Yes, because a chance might happen to you. And also, I don't know how she did this, but in all of the lockdowns, her Instagram account, she still uploaded modeling pictures and coming this fall, my fucking bikinis. So she was constantly during all lockdowns.
Lockdown. She would have broken it.
What? Yeah.
It was work. I had a work permit. Yeah. She would have been one of those.
And someone was like, but how are you getting photography done for all of this time when we're in lockdown? And I just was like, I can't believe no one like, I don't know, like she gets away with it. I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway, I hate her so much. Anyway.
She's a fucking idiot. Hey, before we get into the Morphe that we watched together.
Yeah.
It's a rare occasion. We're kicking it old school watching the same movie. We've been watching bits and pieces of TV.
Yes.
Before we get into the TV shows that we've been watching together as well. We've actually been spending some time together. It's weird.
Because you got rid of that stupid job and you're getting another.
All right. Okay. But yeah, I'm going to cut that bit out.
Shut up.
I've completely lost track of what I was going to say. Oh, I've been watching Rebels, Star Wars Rebels. Just want to give a shout out. I've done this a lot. I don't know why I shout out other podcasts on our podcast, but if you like Star Wars and you like really good film and TV and video game criticism, and I mean that in the sense of like journalistic criticism, go and listen to a podcast called A More Civilized Age. It's four guys who used to work for Vice and a whole bunch of other organizations. They're all very, very, very good journalists and writers, and they're also very entertaining on the podcast. And it's fun for them to not be talking about serious stuff and they just talk about Star Wars. It's fucking great. They're doing Rebels at the moment. Their critiques of Andor, which is the best Star Wars thing done since the first film, is superb. So go and listen to that. But anyway, so I've been listening to that, watching that. You know, it's a kid's show, but it's pretty good.
We have been watching, well, I have been watching it, and then Damien's been slipping into the room and watching it.
A slip in and out of your viewing habit.
At the moment, I'm going back and forth between watching Little House on the Prairie. And Gordon, old episodes of Gordon, Kitchen Nightmares. First off, Little House on the Prairie, fuck me. I love this show so much. I'm up to season 8. I've got 1.5 seasons to go. And today we watched an episode together and we both cried. And you know why? It was about a fucking dog that was protecting the family.
Yeah, it was hard for me to... hard for me to not, like, you put a dog in something, I'm going to.
But also, no, but we started crying when the kid that has a stutter got bullied.
Yeah, two things that are going to make, like, it was like the show was written for me to be like, oh.
It's so beautiful. There was a
little kid who was getting bullied because he had a stutter. And then there was this dog that was a stray that, like, looked after the main family. And then they essentially gave him away to the boy who had the stutter. Oh.
And it protected him and they loved him.
But Kitchen Nightmares, this is something I'm really glad that we've struck on this because this is something I used to do with my mate Lucas and my sister when we lived together. We used to watch a lot of sort of like cooking reality TV. Not Australian stuff because that's all bullshit. I hate it. Cultural cringe. Anything to do with Gordon Ramsay, I was into. So essentially the game show with all the chefs, whatever it's called, Gordon Ramsay's Next Top Chef or whatever the fuck.
Oh, no, the one, the Hell's Kitchen one.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen.
Dude, Hell's Kitchen with the red and the blue team.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that is fantastic.
I don't like that as much. I thought it was fine. The show that I loved the most was Come Dine With Me. Do you know that show?
No, I never watched that show. Mate, I heard about that. We've got to watch that
together.
Yeah, because Celia has told me about that.
I could imagine, Seals and I have similar tastes. I can imagine she would like that because it's a reality show. A lot of weirdos on it. A lot of weird people. And what makes the show is the guy who does the narration. A lot of very dry insults from the narrator to the people in the show. So that's a lot of fun. And but the thing that I really loved was Gordon's Kitchen Nightmares.
It's actually, even though it's old, it's a really fun show for us to watch together because we just, like the episode you just watched, we're always on the same page. Yeah. And we're just yelling at like, this fucking bitch, listen to the chef. He knows what he's talking about. Or this fucking chef needs to go. Like, and it's fun. I really like watching it. But if I can get more episodes of Hell's Kitchen, I'll get into that as well because I feel like that is a really good indication of, like, the only the strong survive. Like, if you are a weak chef, you are out of there. It is really clear.
I don't know about that because it's a bit like Drag Race where it's like you can – a lot of the time you can pick who they think – I think in those reality shows, it gets sort of telegraphed a bit as to who the favorites are, and then it comes down to two or three people. I don't mind Kitchen. Why are they called the same thing?
Hell's Kitchen.
I don't mind Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. I really like the premise of Kitchen Nightmare.
Yeah, I think it's really good.
I don't like reality TV a lot of the time, but what I like about this premise is the restaurant asks Gordon to come. Right?
Yeah.
And they obviously spend money on the restaurant and that's what's in it for the people who have the restaurant and they get the expertise of Ramsay for a week, right? Not a bad deal. And then they have to, essentially they have to put their hand up and say, we're not very good at running a restaurant. So that's obviously a bit shit.
And it's always clear from the get-go if the problem is the owner or the manager or the chef.
Well, it's also about how... Are these people willing to swallow their pride to improve their restaurant or do they let their ego get in the way of success? And that's a really interesting, it's always interesting, right? There's a like a famous interview of John from the Beatles. Hang on.
Hey, puppy. Come here.
John from the Beatles talking about the formation of the Beatles after they had broken up. And, you know, they sort of asked about Paul and like, you know, the question was something along the lines of like, would it have been better for you to have had the group without Paul? And John was like, well, the group wouldn't have happened without Paul. He's like, I knew from the minute I met him that he was as good, if not slightly better than me as a musician. But I had to make the call in that moment. Do I keep the group going the way it is and I'm totally in charge but it's not as good? Or do I let this guy who's obviously got ambitions to lead his own group as well into the group and make the group a thousand times better, but I lose a little bit of control over it? And I chose the second because I wanted the group to be as good as it could be, and it worked out pretty well, right? But I see that same conundrum put in front of these, like this, you know, these people who run these restaurants time after time after time, and it is amazing to me the amount of people who let their ego get in the way of having a successful restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a Michelin star chef. Me personally, I say this to you a lot. I see you kind of raise your eyebrows like, what do you know? I always think that Ramsay's food doesn't look like world-class appetizing. It always looks good, but I never see anything on a plate where I'm like blown away by it. But still, the runs are on the board. He's Gordon fucking Ramsay. He's got hats. He's got, you know, he knows what he's doing. And there'll be some, we just watched an episode with this grandma who runs this terrible fucking fine food establishment in New Jersey, and she just battled him on every single aspect throughout the whole week. Like, the decor was terrible. He wanted to get rid of that. She refused to fucking, she cried when he got rid of the decor. He simplified the menu. She thought that was bullshit. She didn't like the blue chairs. It was fucking crazy. And then we, our favorite thing to do is to look up the restaurant after the episode to see what happened with it. And I would say 98% of the restaurants are closed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Right?
I think we've only looked up one so far that is like, oh, no, it's still going. It's doing really, really well.
Yeah, I just, yeah, it's great. And I think it's like what I like about, do you know when you get reality shows where people don't have talent and they can win, like Big Brother or whatever? I always appreciate a reality show where they are very talented, which Drag Race does do. And like
Project Well, that's my problem with Drag Race. I want to see more of that on Drag Race.
And like, so things like Project Runway, where they've got to make clothes and stuff, like they are, it is very clear the best are in the top three and stuff like that. And the same with Hell's Kitchen, like they get rid of, because I actually thought they had this kid that had kidney disease, like it was like a white Gary Coleman in there. And I was like, oh, mate, Gordon's going to eat this up. And he was struggling in the kitchen, and Gordon's like, yeah, you're out. You know what I mean? I actually thought he'd feel sorry for him because he was could barely, you know, see over the hot plate.
Yeah.
But he didn't play favorite. Like, he's like, all right, young man, get out of here. This is not a restaurant for you.
Restaurant.
Like, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I really like it. Should we talk about the movie we watched?
Yeah. So as it says on the tin, we watched Saturday Night. Just to give a bit of context about this film, as far as our own thing, we've done episodes on season premieres of SNL. We've talked about SNL a lot. We do a lot of like Monday quarterback talking about SNL and its problems and what's wrong with SNL. We will legitimately send each other sketches from SNL throughout the day at work and stuff. I don't think, I didn't think I would ever meet someone who was as nuffy about SNL as my wife. So we're going to have some opinions about this film. It's going to be strong. I think we're going to agree with each other. But I suppose the context of the film, this film was written and directed by Jason Reitman, Ivan Reitman's son. Ivan Reitman wrote or... did he co-write with Aykroyd? I think he did. And directed Ghostbusters. So the Reitman family kind of have that connection with the not ready for primetime players. This film is about the first recording of Saturday Night Live. Do you want to talk about it first?
No, I think that's what it's just the first episode of SNL. Look, I'm pretty big on SNL stuff. I really love it. Well, you know, in the heyday, and we still watch it together.
Yeah.
Because we on and honestly,
it's almost hate watching at this yeah, point. We do watch it pretty much every week.
We honestly hate watch SNL every week, and the only fucking part that is really funny is
update.
Colin, and Michael at the update, like at the desk. That is, and then the minute they have a character come in, if it's Ego, I fucking will want to throw the TV through the window, and if it's Sarah, we're like A plus.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Marcello, A plus.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few that it's good, but I think that Ego is probably one of the worst cast members they've ever had because she's never ever done anything. Like, I don't think she's a good actress. I don't think she does good characters. You used to hear her on Comedy Bang Bang. You know what I mean? And she's terrible on that. And then you see people like Sarah and Heidi and Chloe and Marcello. Mate, he is killing it. And who's the one that you like, Longbottom, whatever his name is? Longfellow. And then the guy that does Trump. Like, there is such a good, strong – there are so many – and Mikey Day. I fucking love Mikey Day. There's so many good people on this show. And every time I see an Ego sketch, it never ends well. And then there's even a sketch that she does where she pretends to be this woman in a restaurant who just, like, cuts her – food really hard and the table wobbles.
Yeah, I know.
And everyone's laughing.
It's
and then,
so bad.
But she's pretending to be like an older black woman. Like,
yeah.
I told them, blah, blah, blah. Like she's from The Help or something. And it's like, you're not even acting like that. That character is just.
Her characters
are
poor.
Offensive and dumb. Like, it's stupid. She's just shit.
All of her characters are stereotypes of black and African American people.
Yeah.
Her ideas are poor. They're poorly executed. She's not a strong actor. She doesn't hold your attention. Anyway.
Anyway, so this film.
So we literally, like fantasy football coaches, will talk about the SNL cast like that.
Yeah. Look, so I knew I would hate watch it. There are a few elements of this that I liked, but overall, no, I did not like. What I did not like is I have a very, very big love for Gilda Radner. I read her book, It's Always Something. In just before I think I moved to America, I've always felt like she opened up my eyes about how my brain worked and comedy worked, and I love Gilda a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the girl who played her was fine, but there was an extra zaniness where it was like, it's Gilda Radner, where I was like, no, you're overindulging. And then there was this other moment where her and John Belushi, like he was ice skating. She was watching him and she was like, can you believe it, John, one day in 20 years we'll be old people and watching. And like was a comment about in 20 years, knowing full well that they both died very fucking young.
Yeah.
And I just felt that that was a manipulation from the writers who fucking Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan wrote Afterlife and Frozen Empire. So he's got a pretty – and he's got like – he's got a good, you know, writing background. I just thought it was such a lame attempt to, you know, like give a hats off to them and da, da, da. And I just thought lame. I just wanted to stand outside of the council building just like those Brighton people did instead of screaming shame. I wanted to be like lame. So there was a lot of really fucking lame bits in it where it was like, ooh, it's SNL, ooh. Yeah. But they did effectively show that Chevy Chase is a cunt, which is what I liked.
Yeah, well, Chevy Chase at the premiere walked up to Jason Reitman and said, you should be ashamed of yourself in this film. So,
really?
Yeah.
Of course he did. Why?
And well, because the film's not very good. And
yeah, okay.
So I don't. I thought the guy played I will say this about this film. When I say I don't think it's very good, I think it has a severe pacing problem. Because
according to Reitman, original cast member Chevy Chase told the director, you should be embarrassed after watching this film. It's funny.
Yeah, well, sometimes the truth hurts, man. I don't know if embarrassed is that's a bit strong.
Article. Here it is.
But anyway, yeah. the pacing of the film is a problem. Because it starts at 100 and there's nowhere to go. I actually found the pace of the film really grating.
Yes.
The sound mix is atrocious.
Atrocious.
There were genuine, and this was a VOD copy. It wasn't any dodgy copy or anything like that. We could not hear the cast. Maybe in a cinema it might have been slightly better, but there was 40% of the film, I couldn't hear the cast for the shitty jazz that was going on in the background. It was like watching Birdman again. There was this constant jazz the whole time. The amount of Aaron Sorkin, like, hallway scenes where it's like, we're going to quickly walk through hallways constantly all the time to give you this, like, manic energy of, it's opening night, everything's going fucking wrong.
It was so fucking annoying.
It was just so over
the top. We actually argued because I was like, babe, you got to turn it up. Like, I was, like, sitting here in a bad mood because I was like, I literally cannot hear any fucking dialogue. And every time you put it up, it would go, like the jazz thing.
We have a Sony sound, but it's like our sound setup, because it's me, is meticulously set up and is fantastic. It's a Sony, like everything's Sony. It's not my shit. It's your, what about your shit? It's the way this,
what about your shit? Yeah,
Nick?
But it's because they had that jazz music playing to show like chaos. And it kept on coming out in over the dialogue. Like, I missed half the film. I missed it because I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, this whole... It was just and also, fucked. Like, there was a lot of... I mean, we picked up on it because we're giant fucking nerds about this stuff.
Mm.
But I think if you were watching that film, there would have been plenty of people who would have watched it that were like, oh, I didn't realize that was Billy Crystal. I didn't realize that little Jewish guy in the corridor that they kept going out, back to was fucking Billy Crystal.
I feel like to watch this film... You had to have a pretty – that's another thing. You had to have a pretty good idea of SNL at the beginning.
Well, even just pop culture from the late 70s or mid-70s, you know? Knowing who Milton Berle is, who's George Carlin, Jim Henson. Like,
yeah.
These are names of people who, for us growing up, when we grew up, household names. But for anyone five years younger than us –
If you're 20...
Yeah, if you're a 20-year-old watching this, you don't know who anybody is.
Exactly. So if you're 20 and you're watching SNL and you're like, oh, there's a movie about how it started in 1975. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'll watch it. If that 20-year-old went in there, because so much of the storyline is based on the fact that we already know a lot of it.
Yeah, the legend of SNL.
The legend. We know Jim Henson.
Yeah, we know that Jim Henson was on the first episode. We know that Andy Kaufman. We know George Carlin was the thing.
All that stuff.
We know Johnny...
They do not fucking set that scene well enough. Like,
no.
You don't have to go to a backstory, but they could have done this film better where you could have given a backstory quickly and blah, blah, but they were so obsessed with having this niche filmmaking of crazy, crazy jazz music to show it's chaotic. Mm. And then people going, whoa, what was that? Fucking boo. Boo, boo, boo.
Yeah, so the sound mix is bad. The script is bad. It suffers from this... I've talked about it on the podcast previously a lot. I call it the Josh Whedon effect on scripts. Mm. It started in Buffy and now it happens on fucking everything where you'll have a group of 6, 7, 8, 9 people in a scene and they just spit out exposition. And it's all quippy and everyone's the smartest person in the room. There's no characterization, you know, like...
Mm.
And then the film would just wander off. So that would be happening. Mm. And then it would just wander off and show us John Belushi in his dressing room being a fucking dickhead. It genuinely paints people as shit. I think most of the people in the cast come across as pretty shitty.
Yeah.
And it casts Lorne's ex-wife, who helped start the show, as a not very nice. It casts Lorne as like this sort of stuttering buffoon who had no idea what was going on, you know, like it doesn't, if you were using this as a reference point of like who everybody was, and you'd be like, this is a cast of arseholes, petulant arseholes led by an idiot who's being used by the network and just fell ass backwards into having a show on fucking NBC.
Like, the thing is, like, Milton Berle bit.
Well, I just wanted to talk about this as well, because he famously had a huge cock, Milton Berle.
That's what I was about to say.
Completely reticent in showing anybody it.
Yeah, but this is what I was about to say is that it's the Hollywood legend that Milton Berle has like one of the biggest cocks.
The biggest dick in Hollywood.
Biggest dick in Hollywood.
Him and Frank Sinatra are like the two that everyone talks about.
And so there's a moment where Chevy Chase and him have an argument and he pulls his dick out and it's and then Chevy's like, his face is like, oh shit, like A, he pulled his dick out and also how big it is.
Yeah.
And there's an arrogance of, you know, Milton Berle, blah, blah, blah. No one knows that under the age of 24, like 30, no, it's not well known unless.
But I think we're weird 40-year-olds for knowing.
Yeah, but it's not even unless you're a weird film buff like us, right? You would know those legends about Milton Berle and his massive cock. Like, I felt like that story in that film, like it wasn't set up like there wasn't a line that's like, you know, about like, oh, Milton Berle is here. Mm. Have you seen it? Oh, I've heard about it. Haven't seen it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All you need is two lines. There's no
context for anything. Yeah.
Yes, put in context. And it just, nothing was like, there was so much writing. And maybe that's okay because the people that are watching this are people that are fans of SNL. Maybe that, and whatever. But I just felt like if you had no idea, like I know people that are 100% funny in comedy, but they aren't big SNL people and they would be confused watching this film. And I think that is a massive disservice to that cast, to Dan, to Gilda, to John, like Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, like all, like that's a great cast. And it's just, what a shame. What a fucking shame.
Yeah.
And it got like 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, which fucking suck my dick.
Well, because I think it gives off the air of being like an indie film or an art film. You know what I mean? Well, not an art film, but like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it gives off the air of like being an indie film. You know, the other thing I hated in the tone of this film as well was. Just the constant hammering home of like how fucking weird and counterculture SNL is.
Oh my god, we're so zany. But that's what the way they wrote Gilda Radner, that's how it was like she's so zany.
But the amount of conversations that Lorne Michaels has with like the suits about like this is groundbreaking stuff here. I'm like, yeah. Not really, because it's not like they didn't exist. First and foremost, it's not like they didn't exist beforehand. Like, these guys were doing radio for National Lampoon's. This cast, basically all of them, were doing radio for National Lampoon's. That's where Lorne found all of them. So, and that was a very popular and successful radio show. So, it's not like people were like, who the fuck are these guys?
It was like Gilda and Dan and John worked together at Second City Toronto as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, like, people know who they are. It's not. And. You know, George Carlin's on the show. Everyone fucking knows who George Carlin is. It's not, it wasn't like it, they were, it's not like kids in the hall starting in punk clubs. You know what I mean? And then like getting this underground following and then just being shoved on TV and no one knowing who the fuck they are. Like,
the one thing they did do that I felt was okay is the relationship with Johnny Carson. And because the legends of Johnny Carson is he was notoriously a fucking asshole.
Yeah, and competitive.
And even though he was on the air for how long? 30-something years. And he was
king of television. King of television. Every comedian in America wanted to suck his dick.
Most famous fucking guy. Yeah. Like, there was no one bigger. Like, if you were on Johnny Carson, there was 120 million people watching you at that time. Like, it was such a big deal. Huh. And he was so threatened by a bunch of undergraduate idiots that from LA, he's, like, calling, trying to, and, like, putting pressure on the network. Don't, what are you doing? Don't let this show go ahead. Don't let this show go ahead. I'm your only star. And like the way he treated, you know, Joan Rivers, there's a million stories about Johnny Carson being a fucking cunt.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they showed that here and they weren't sympathetic to him, that they showed him like LA, and LA was him being a fucking asshole because he was.
Yeah, because
he lost half his money.
When he retired, divorced. Like, you just didn't see him again. The reason why you didn't see him again because no one wanted to fucking work with him.
Yeah, I just remember the Eddie Murphy joke from Raw.
Yeah.
Where he talks about the divorce. He's like, people ask me why I'm not married yet. And he's like, because I saw like the front page of the Inquirer and Johnny looks like this. And he's like, sad face. And he's like, because he had to give $150 million to his ex-wife.
Yeah.
He's like, $150 million? $150 million? There's a whole bit about Johnny Carson where he's like, you know, because it's like they have to split what they had in the marriage. And he's like, they're only married 10 years. $150 million. That her pussy must have an S on it with a cape. Do you remember it?
No, I do. I just remember. As soon as you said the punchline, I remembered the bit. Yeah.
But just, I did there you go, darling. And she might get a job on the weekends as a hairdresser. And look, she makes put $70. There you go, Johnny. It's $150 million and $70. So I meet a woman. She's going to be butt naked on a zebra. Is that offensive now?
I don't know. I think it's still
okay. It's a pretty funny joke.
I mean, in comparison to some of the gear fucking Chappelle and Gervais and stuff are doing, it's however, child's play.
We did watch Chappelle's opening. Chappelle's monologue the other week.
Yeah, we did watch him on SNL.
14 minutes long. One of the longest monologues ever. Very good. He absolutely shouts out to Palestine and he goes, and he actually says a thing about Trump at the end where he's like, and, you know, I know you're watching. Come on. You watch the show. He's like, be compassionate, be like this, blah, blah, blah. Like, I respect
Look,
that.
Look, he got through 14 minutes without being transphobic. So it's a start.
I know. And I appreciate that too. I'm just saying that I really appreciate when someone uses their platform to...
Maybe that's the end of it. Maybe we don't hear anything else from him about it. But the specials are there, not to be this person.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
The specials are there. As I said to you at the time, if he does three specials in a row about Zionism, then great. That will go some way to making up for the damage he's done the last 10 years.
Right. Well, how many grumps do you give Saturday night?
Oh, two.
Yeah, I'll give it two as well. Yeah, two. I mean...
Because it annoyed me.
Like,
2.5 is the median, right? Out of 5. And there was so much about this film that annoyed me. It felt like such a missed opportunity. Here are some positives. There are a couple of laughs. There are a couple of things. But a lot of that comes from the actual show. I think it is cast well. It is a young cast, and I think everyone plays their parts. I mean, I know you said that you didn't really like the Gilda Radner.
But that's the
way it's written rather than the way
they wrote her to be like.
I thought the cast was actually pretty strong. I thought most of the people were cast well. The guy who does Aykroyd, it was great. Yeah. The guy who does Chevy Chase was really good. And I actually really like him because he was in a couple of superhero shows and is now doing this.
Excellent.
Good work to get out of that, you know. Because a lot of those people who do those CW shows and stuff get fucking typecast and they're stuck on CW forever. I thought everyone, you know, like William Dafoe's in it as a sort of like faceless NBC guy. I think J.K. Simmons does a good evil version of Milton Berle. The only person who probably didn't do great was Colbert's old piano player, playing Billy Preston.
Baptiste?
Yeah, John Baptiste, is it? Not great. But anyway, everybody else.
Yeah.
No, he didn't sound or look anything like Billy Preston at all. Really disappointing. And I think I held off on watching this film for that long because it gave off vibes of that. We've talked about this before. I know we're sort of going over, but... This is something that this phenomenon that we keep coming across where it's a film that should have been a TV show and TV shows that should have been a film. And I just don't, no one seems to know what they have. If this was a 6-part HBO thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Starting like a week before, like do the week, right? Do the week of SNL, or the 6 days leading up to SNL. 6 episodes, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I think that if they had done that, I would have said this could have been a movie.
No, I think it would have been way more interesting. Or just make a documentary film about the...
Yeah, I would much rather had watched a documentary with people talking heads about
but
it.
But the reason why I say TV show is because there's insinuations that Dan Aykroyd's fucking Lorne Michaels' wife. And then that goes nowhere. There's the... I'm going to forget the black cast member's name.
Garrett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The film sort of swings onto him for a bit and he's complaining about... he doesn't know why he's here. Is he a like token hire, blah, blah. And then that goes nowhere. There's all this stuff going on. Chevy being told by the the network that he's a star, but they're doing it as a bullshit thing. Like, all of these little threads of stories that are interesting and could go somewhere, they go nowhere.
Mm.
They go nowhere. And again, it's another film where there are no fucking stakes because we know the show went to air because we're still watching the show 50 years later.
Mm.
So you're sitting here watching this cacophony of noise and messiness to know what's going to happen at the end of the film.
All right, I'm going to change my thing. I'm going to give it 1.5 grumps because I'm mad that the sound mix was so bad.
It was really bad. You know what? I'm going to – this is unprecedented.
Jason Reitman, I could not hear your fucking dialogue. Yeah,
couldn't hear the movie, man. No, I'm going to drop it down to 1.5 stars as well.
Yeah, I just the sound mix made me angry and I couldn't enjoy it. All right, better go because we've got to turn this AC on.
You know what they say? When it's time for Kelly to potty, it's time to end the potty.
Yay!
Quickly, before I forget and before we finish, I want to give a shout out to Zach and Antonia for your very kind words and messages about the podcast. Thank you very much. If you want to get a shout out on the podcast, you can reach out to us on social media or maybe just shout out to us from the window of your car. We don't care. Just let us know what you like about the podcast and we'll come back here and record it.
They like my tits.
Because we're narcissists who love this kind of positive feedback. But yeah, if you want to get it out to more people, rate and review it on whatever platform. We don't care. We're desperate now. Just do it.
Tell your friends and share.
Tell your friends, share it. Eat, sleep, share, repeat.
Hey, all right.
Okay, all right, we're going to go. Love you, mate.
I love you.
Love you.